to another Friday 5 episode here on the Agent Survival Guide podcast. It is Friday, May 3rd, 2024, and I'm your host, Sarah Ruppel. This is our weekly list of 5 things you should know about. We are just days away from the Apple event that might end up being more of an Apple Pencil event than an iPad event, but that is a story for next week's episode. We are starting out our list this week at number 5 with recent reports of a bug hitting iPhone users' alarms. If you use your iPhone as an alarm clock, like I do, you'll either be alarmed or relieved to learn what I learned this week. There's a bug silencing users' alarms, resulting in quite a few users oversleeping their alarms. I've had this happen a few times while setting a timer on my phone, and to be honest, I had no idea what was causing it to happen. But now I do, so hopefully the way I learned to resolve that situation will work for you too. First off, I do have to mention that I typically go through most days with my phone on silent, especially weekdays. When I go to bed, I turn on my sleep podcast, and then I typically turn my phone's volume up about halfway so I can actually hear it. Eventually, my queue of episodes stops playing, and when my alarms start in the morning, my phone is still set at medium volume. However, on weekend afternoons, I haven't been in the habit of making changes to my phone volume, and if I take a nap, I typically set a timer rather than an alarm. And sometimes my well-intentioned 20-minute nap ends up going long because the timer is going off silently, not waking me up in the slightest, unless I happen to be wearing my Apple Watch. Then the haptic vibration will usually wake me up. Now, Apple has acknowledged the bug and said that there is a fix coming. In the meantime, there is a way to rectify this on your own, and it involves going into your iPhone's settings, tapping on sounds and haptics, and then toggle off the ability to change the phone's volume with buttons. That is referring to the buttons on the side of your phone. That way, the control of your ringtone and notifications is set to whatever level you select in that sound and haptics tab. Now, an important caveat to be aware of, if you separate ringtone and notification sounds from the volume buttons on the side, you might end up hearing those sounds when you don't want them. So that's always a setting that you can wait to turn on until you go to bed. After you set your alarm or alarms, in my case, I currently set between 7 and 10 alarms each night. I am normally wearing my Apple Watch as well, so that helps, but I am in the camp of multiple iPhone alarms. A handful of TikTok users experiencing this issue chalked it up to the attention-aware features setting under Face ID and passcode. But currently, the fix that Apple support seems to be sharing with users is the previously mentioned sound and haptics fix. Number 4. Ever since Elon Musk bought Twitter in late 2022, even before the rebrand to X, there's been a lot of talk about the app that would replace Twitter. We've mentioned a lot of them here on the show. Tumblr, Mastodon, Hive Social, Threads, Blue Sky, and our newest addition to the list of contenders, LinkedIn. And this consideration comes not from me, but from a TechCrunch piece that had my head bobbing along with all the arguments. So we will be linking to that in the notes. The stats in the article paint an interesting picture of growth in web traffic to LinkedIn, while web traffic to X declined. On mobile, the same was also true. LinkedIn saw an increase in downloads and usage of their app, while X saw a decrease in app downloads and usage. The part that I was bobbing my head in agreement to came from the writer positing that the increase in web traffic was likely from users switching from scrolling through their Twitter feeds during the workday to scrolling through LinkedIn, We do tend to utilize social platforms from computer browsers while at work rather than our phones or tablets. What was interesting, though, the stats on monthly download decreases at X were attributed to the rebrand from Twitter to X, not necessarily a shift in user behavior. Now, of course, these stats are a snapshot of our nation's larger social diet, but it does paint an interesting picture of LinkedIn, maybe not as a Twitter replacement, but one of many possible stations along the path of mass exodus. For a long time, I think a lot of us were thinking that an app could rise up and take Twitter's place. It could just be that the flock will scatter out into the existing social ether, and every platform will see a bump. And it also could be that LinkedIn is embracing the change with an interesting addition this week. On Wednesday, the networking platform announced the addition of games to the platform. Rupel recommends. Now, just in case you're concerned, this is not the second coming of Farmville. The three new games on LinkedIn are short logic puzzles, similar to Connections and Wordle, both of which are New York Times games. Pinpoint is similar to Connections in that you have to figure out how the words are related. Rather than finding the connection between a group of 16 words, Pinpoint gives you one word at a time, and you have to guess the common thread. Each incorrect guess gives you another word, helping you to pinpoint the connection. Cross Climb is a trivia game, giving users clues to guess the four-letter word. Users must correctly answer five clues, then put them in order so that just one letter changes from word to word. That unlocks the top and bottom slots, where one clue describes two words. And then finally, Queens. I would describe this as a cross between Pentominoes, Minesweeper, and Sudoku, keeping some of the existing rules and adding in a few new elements. Overall, I had fun playing these games. I think they're unique offerings in a space where that hasn't historically always happened. It feels like everyone has a crossword, so it was refreshing to see something new and a little bit different. These games are definitely geared toward quick completion, but there's also a healthy dose of competition. Users can challenge first connections on LinkedIn by sending scores through InMail. And then scores are also attributed to the schools listed in your LinkedIn profile. So that's kind of fun to see how those standings change on a daily basis. I have to say, I appreciate the quick nature of the new LinkedIn offerings. I'm already playing Spelling Bee, and I enjoy coming back to it throughout the day, but I don't really have time for another game that takes that amount of time and effort throughout the day. But that being said, I know a lot of people really enjoy some of the other New York Times games, like the crossword and Wordle. So that brings us to our podcast question of the week. I am asking you the hard question to choose between the games offered by the New York Times. Am I looking for fellow Spelling Bee enthusiasts out there? I mean, maybe, but I'm also curious about the crossword and if people are still loving and playing Wordle. To cast your vote, you can head over to bit.ly/ASG question. That's bit.ly/ASG question, or use the link in our episode notes. Number three, this week marked another rate-setting meeting for the Federal Open Market Committee. And given the status of inflation 2 weeks ago, the results were definitely not surprising. To recap, the March 2024 Consumer Price Index was up 3.5% year over year and up 0.4% from February 2024. The March 2024 Personal Consumption Expenditure Index came in at an increase of 2.7% year over year and that was up 0.2% from February 2024. And then, of course, there was the jobs report that estimated 200,000 jobs added to the market in March 2024. The actual number of positions created came in at 303,000. In short, the higher interest rates are doing the job of slowing inflation down, but not slowing it down enough to decrease rates at the moment. Usually, the experts are pretty spot on as far as what the Fed plans to do. This was one of those meetings where we were all just waiting to hear Fed Chair Jerome Powell confirm that they would be holding rates steady. And that is exactly what happened. Interest rates will hold steady between 5.25 and 5.5%. For the majority of us tuning in live, I feel like we were mainly looking for comments on how he thinks the process is going and what the future looks like. When asked about the potential for an interest rate hike at the next meeting, Powell answered, quote, "I think it's unlikely that the next policy rate move will be a hike. I'd say it's unlikely. I think we'd need to see persuasive evidence that our policy stance is not sufficiently restrictive to bring inflation sustainably down to 2% over time. That's not what we think we're seeing," end quote. That being said, Powell did acknowledge the Fed's conservative stance moving forward. He mentioned that the economic data doesn't currently show that inflation is falling closer to that 2% threshold that they are looking for. Without that confidence, the committee doesn't feel comfortable making a change. Powell explained, quote, "So far this year, the data have not given us that greater confidence. It is likely that gaining such greater confidence will take longer than previously expected. We are prepared to maintain the current target federal funds rate for as long as appropriate," end quote. In addition to holding rates steady, the committee slowed the process of allowing bonds to mature without reinvesting the proceeds. Previously, the Fed was holding $60 billion in bonds on their balance sheet. They announced plans to cut that down to $25 billion. Powell also mentioned in his comments that the Fed is keeping an eye on labor markets after that surprise March report. The next rate-setting meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee will be held on June 11th and 12th. We will also get a summary of economic projections at that meeting. Number two, back in early March of 2020, Walmart CEO Doug McMillon called the company's expansion into healthcare a big opportunity. This week, the retail giant announced it would shutter the 51 health clinics it has opened since then. The company chalked the decision up to a, quote, "challenging reimbursement environment and escalating operating costs," end quote. The healthcare centers operated in Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Missouri, and Texas, next to Walmart supercenters. The clinics provided a variety of services: primary care, behavioral health services, labs, x-rays, dental, and urgent care. Originally, the plan was to facilitate care for those without health insurance, while also giving those with high deductible health plans another option for accessing care. There was talk of implementing a standard pricing system. The hope was to act as a quasi-replacement for a primary care physician in underserved areas. And that need is still there, especially in the context of primary care. According to the Association of American Medical Colleges, we are looking at quite the shortage in primary care physicians during the next decade. The closure of Walmart Health also applies to Walmart virtual healthcare services, in addition to those 51 brick-and-mortar locations. So far, no official word on specific closure dates, but that announcement should be coming soon. If you have one of these facilities in your area, it might be a good idea to get the word out in your newsletters so you can help affected clients. Also important to note, this closure does not apply to Walmart's in-store healthcare offerings. According to the press release, Their pharmacies and vision centers are still going strong, and that's where they plan to shift their innovation efforts. Currently, Walmart operates 4,600 pharmacies and 3,000 vision centers in their stores nationwide. Moving on to our top story this week, we have the potential rescheduling of marijuana coming in at number one. On Tuesday this week, reports came in across various media sources that the Justice Department would soon be announcing their plan to reschedule marijuana from a Schedule 1 drug to a Schedule 3 drug. For comparison's sake, other Schedule 1 drugs include heroin, LSD, ecstasy, quaaludes, and peyote. If reclassified, marijuana would move from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, alongside Tylenol with codeine, ketamine, anabolic steroids, and testosterone. So far, the reclassification has been proposed, but has yet to be published in the Federal Register. From there, the rulemaking process begins, including a public comment period, so very early stages here. Back in 2022, the Biden administration asked the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to review the potential for reclassification. The controlled substance staff recommended rescheduling marijuana because of low potential for abuse when compared to other Schedule 1 and 2 substances, accepted use as a medical treatment, and a low to moderate risk for physical dependence when abused. The move to a Schedule 3 classification would mean less restrictions on marijuana production, as well as research, something that's been extremely limited with the drug's current Schedule 1 classification. There are also tax implications that could benefit the cannabis industry. Currently, most businesses in the industry are not eligible for that relief, but the new classification means lower tax rates and the ability to claim credits and reductions. That could translate into business expansions, creating more jobs and products, possibly even lowering prices. Reclassification still would not legalize the drug under federal law, which is interesting, considering that most states have taken more liberal stances on the drug in the past few years. Currently, 38 states have legalized medical marijuana programs, and 24 states have approved recreational use of marijuana for adults. As I mentioned, early, very early stages, we will be keeping an eye as this develops and reporting back here. Before we close out this week's episode, we have the results of our question of the week from last week's episode. We wanted to know which product you found most challenging to learn about. And we had another tie between long-term care and Medicare Advantage, with short-term care coming in third place. We will definitely be keeping those answers in mind as we're creating content around those topics and refreshing some of our older content for newer agents just getting into the business. For those of you who have been voting and participating in those polls, thank you so much for doing that. We really appreciate your feedback. And as always, thanks for taking the time to listen to our episode this week. I hope you have a great weekend. Stay healthy and stay safe out there. And we will see you next week. The Agent Survival Guide podcast is a production of Ritter Insurance Marketing, an integrity company. This episode was written and produced by me, Sarah Ruppel. Script editing and fact check by Tina Lamoureux. Podcast design by Urban Rivera. Artwork by Vivian Zhao. Follow along with us wherever you like to listen.